When we think about nature or we talk about spirituality, it's easy to see it as something other, something disconnected from the modern world that we have to live in day to day. We save it for the weekend or for our morning meditation sessions, and we view the wisdom of the ancients as something quaint, but certainly not something that we should bring into the office. But this cultural disconnect could actually be doing us more harm than good. By turning our backs on nature and creating lives that are more processed than ever in terms of what we consume both into our bodies and our minds, we are making ourselves ill, or at the very least, living lives that are lackluster and dull. What if instead we were to find a way of connecting with the spiritual wisdom of nature, of ancient cultures, and bring it into our daily lives in a way that seemed perfectly, well, natural? This is Conversations on Living, a podcast about being well, doing well, and living well. I'm Chris Brock, and this week I'm speaking with Ben Levine. He's a herbalist and co-founder of Rasa. Rasa is a coffee alternative made with adaptogenic plants, mushrooms, and herbs. It's designed to nourish our nervous systems, enhance and balance our energy, and calm our stress. And it's based on a relationship with nature that is not exploitative, as in most Western industries and most Western agricultural practices, but is instead reciprocal. It's about flavour and feeling, spiritually, emotionally, and physically, as a form of communication between ourselves and our bodies and the natural world around us. I chatted with Ben about the science behind our relationship with plants and how we can enter into dialogues with them in ways that are beneficial to everyone, to you, to me, and the planet we live on, and which can make us more effective in our day-to-day dealings in the modern world. To find out more about Rasa and what they're all about, you can find them at wearerasa.com, and listeners to the podcast can get a discount of 15% on their first order. Just enter the voucher codes wherever you get it, and that code is LIVING15, all caps. And also just a quick mention about Headliner. Headliner is the service that I use to create audiograms, which are those social media-sized clips of audio with a visual behind them. It might be captions, it might be a waveform, and I use it to promote this podcast. And Headliner is certainly the easiest and most powerful way to create them. So if you host a podcast, definitely check them out. That's at headliner.app. And another word about Plane. Plane is a game which is designed to help us to bring meditation and mindfulness into our lives. If you've been struggling with the idea of meditation or mindfulness, but it's something you really want to, you know, give a go, and you're also into video games, then Plane is certainly the best way to do it. You can either go online and search for Plane on Google or whichever is your preferred search engine, and or search for meditation game, and Plane will be one of the first results you get. Or you can go to www.plane.co. That's PLAYNE.co. And also don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Conversations on Living. It's a podcast that comes from the heart. I'm scratching an itch here about how to engage with life, get the most out of life. And I hope that there is great value here for anyone who listens to it. So, find it wherever you can, give us a review, subscribe to it. And if you want to hear more episodes, head over to conversationsonliving.com. And if you want to carry on the conversation, head over to our Facebook group. Just search for Conversations on Living. Okay, that's enough from me. Time to now get into this conversation with Ben Levine about our relationship with plants and how we can eat well and feel well and be well by being very, very conscious about the things we put into our body. Okay, so Ben, thank you so much for joining me. How's your day going over there so far?
It's a beautiful sunny Colorado.
Fantastic.
Early spring, still gonna snow, but it's beautiful out. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
No worries. Thanks for joining me. We did plan to do this a few weeks ago, but I got hit by storms and the power went out for 6 days, and we had to reschedule. So I'm so grateful that you could do that for me. But talking of Colorado, to cut a long story short, you have created a company that sells kind of a coffee alternative that's very it's adaptogenic, and maybe we can talk about that a bit later. But the thing that really appealed to me was the story behind your creation of this new company, this new product. And it starts in Colorado, doesn't it? You're up in the mountains, and you had an experience with the plants and the herbs up there. So maybe you could tantalize us a little bit with the story of how this all began and how Rasa came to be.
Or Rasa, yeah, Rasa. Sorry. Several streams entered the ocean at the same time to become Rasa. And on my side of things, I'm a co-founder. I just really fell in love with herbs and was on this decade-long journey of kind of like getting out of my head and getting into my body. And herbs helped me tremendously in that way of developing sensitivity and starting to understand herbs as not just a commodity, but more of a relationship and something that can also communicate back with me. And there's a dialogue there. And I had an experience in the mountains in Colorado when I was first really learning about herbs. I was just finishing up my first year of herb school, and intuition just told me one weekend, get in your car and drive. I had no idea where I was going. And I ended up about an hour into the mountains down this dirt road and got out of my car, started walking up this other dirt road. And there on the side was a little hidden trail, no trail markers, nothing like that. And I started walking up that trail and found a stand of this plant that's sacred to this region for the Arapaho and Ute tribes and Cheyenne, and it's called Osha. And it's just a really beautiful, powerful plant. And it was my first time harvesting it at all or sitting with it. And I dug a little bit of the root and ate some of the root and had one of those moments where it's a little hard to describe. There was a lot of information getting relayed to me and a lot of knowing and a lot of reassurance. Like, this is my path. I just need to let the plants lead me. And it was beautiful. And that was I think that was the singular moment when I totally committed to becoming an herbalist and following this plant path.
This sounds a little bit like a kind of psychedelic experience. Is that what we're talking about here, or is it?
No psychedelics were involved, but I think all plants are on a spectrum, and psychedelics are not necessarily special in that way. Chamomile, peppermint, they also change how you perceive the world, and they change your nervous system. Like, drink one cup of peppermint tea, which, you know, it's extremely common available herb, and like your vision will shift slightly.
Yeah.
And I think there are obviously much more powerful plants out there, like the psychedelics, which I'm also fond of. But on a more subtle, maybe spiritual level, like, the relationship with plants can feel psychedelic, because things are happening that are out of our ordinary waking life. A bit of a trance, as in a trance, dreamlike kind of state. And so, I think there's a lot to explore there.
Do you, because I'm very much into Shinrin-yoku, which, you know, forest bathing and stuff like mm-hmm. that, as listeners of this podcast are probably very bored of hearing me talk about. And, you know, the forest is a very meditative space if you allow it to be. And if you open up your intuition, you can kind of deeply connect with yourself, with the kind of help of the trees around you. But also that there's been a lot of scientific research that has shown that forests are essentially act like single organisms. And then when we walk into the forest, because there's a kind of reciprocity going on, you know, we breathe out carbon dioxide, which they absorb, and they produce, you know, oxygen, which we need to live. So in essence, we become part of that organism. Is that kind of where you're going when you're saying there's kind of communication going backwards and forwards? There's this kind of, not necessarily a transaction, but there's a kind of, you know, you're getting flavors, you're getting the way the plants make you feel, that kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about with this kind of information exchange you're talking about?
I think there's a lot of ways to try and describe it. Like, the forest bathing is a great example. There's maybe you're walking into an organism that's bigger than you are, and you're entering into, you know, the energetic field of that organism, the forest, and you're getting some sort of interaction through that. They're on a chemical level, forests are releasing a lot of terpenes. That's why, you know, pine forests smell so good.
Yeah.
And those not only impact our nervous system and our mood as we breathe them in, but they also ionize the air in a similar way that the ocean is ionized, and we feel more relaxed by the ocean. And so there's so many ways to explain it. And then on the more plant spirit side of things, how, you know, I got really fascinated with South America and ayahuasca. You know, like as an herbalist, you ask a lot of herbalists in the jungle in South America, like, how do you know that this plant is good for this? And they say, oh, ayahuasca told us. And you're like, okay, there's something going on with the spirit communication. And then there's a way to do that with many plants. And I don't know of any good modern explanations for how that's happening. But it's happening, and it's a mixture of intuition and felt sensing and knowing, and also sometimes more direct, like yes and no. Like I remember one time, another example of this particular plant we were talking about, OSHA, I was going to harvest some, I don't know, maybe a year after this first experience, and a very clear no came up in my being. I was like, I'm not harvesting today. And it felt very direct, like no. and that's, I think there's such a wide range of possible experiences with plants.
Do you think that as a kind of, I mean, you seem very open to these messages, and probably something you've kind of worked on over, you know, the years that you've been interested in herbs and plants and that kind of thing. But do you think kind of generally people are just, because we've lost, I've had conversations on this podcast where we talked about science used to be trying to uncover the unknown, but now it's kind of flipped the other way, whereas we now take science to be the be all and end all of everything. And we forget that there are unknowns out there that we still haven't kind of discovered yet. We're part of that. We have ways of tapping into that. If we can just open up ourselves, listen to our intuition, you know, appreciate the kind of the subtle body that extends beyond us and that kind of thing. Do you think that there is a kind of space for that right now in kind of contemporary Western culture? Or do you think we've kind of closed ourselves off too much to it?
I think we've lost it to a large degree. You look at other cultures outside of the West, and they're much more in tune with the natural world. We've shifted largely to a more mechanistic view of how the body works, how the world works. You know, we're cogs in a machine. Our liver is a cog in the machine of our body. You know, the view of the environment is not alive and complex, but like we're going to reduce it to its parts and understand its parts. And that, I think, is really has helped us a lot in expanding science, but has hurt us a lot because we lose everything that is somewhat subjective, like a lot of these experiences. I mean, you could trace it back to Descartes kind of splitting the spirit and the body, anything that we can't put outside of ourselves and reduce to an understandable piece is not worth studying or not real. I mean, you could even go that far. But our culture is starting to come back around in small ways. In the world of science, you know, the field of psychoneuroimmunology, for example, is a good illustration of us starting to be like, oh, okay, like psychoneuroimmunology is the study of how our mental space, our immune system, our hormones, like they're all connected. And it's oh, okay, we're back to the mind-body connection in a way that we have started to, you know, we've ignored for hundreds of years.
Yeah, I mean, I've had numerous conversations with people who work in that area, you know, how kind of emotional trauma and stress and anxiety, you know, that all of us collect. You know, you don't have to have been, you know, in a terrible situation. We all collect it. Life is suffering, the Buddhists will tell us. But often, you know, if it's not dealt with properly, it comes out sideways in, you know, stomach ulcers or migraines or all kinds of illnesses that the doctors don't know what the cause is. So they end up treating the problem and then it relocates somewhere else. I'm reading a book called I think it's called The Mind Body Prescription at the moment, which is all about this, all about tackling chronic pain through releasing emotional trauma.
Amazing.
In terms of your experience with plants and coming to that kind of not just a biological or even a culinary appreciation, but also that spiritual appreciation. Was that always there, or did that develop as you got more into kind of appreciating plants and herbs and that sort of thing?
I think it developed. It's been almost a training process to open myself up to the natural world and to trusting my intuition and to being able to feel even. A funny story. I think I used to be very locked in my head, and I did a Vipassana, which is many people have done those 10 days, 10 hours a day meditating, and you're just focused entirely on your body. And before Vipassana, I was, you know, there were times when I was drinking 5 cups of coffee a day and not really feeling that much. And after Vipassana, I could have 1 cup of peppermint tea and feel the effects of that herb so much stronger. And so like that was one of those inflection points in my journey of like, oh, okay, now I'm in my body, or I'm more sensitive to my body, and I can feel herbs in a way that I didn't before. And that started to open up this other dimension. And then experiences like Osho on the mountaintop really brought home to me that there's this big spiritual side of herbs as well, that's often ignored in commerce, but is a very traditional way of seeing the herbs. Like there's no separation in many of the cultures these herbs come from. You know, the herbs act on all levels, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and that's recognized and celebrated in a way that we would never think of, you know, talking about ibuprofen that way.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about the Vipassana facelift, don't they? People coming out of these 10 days retreats looking younger and more vibrant. And I suppose there is a cleansing. I mean, you're there for 10 days. I guess you're not drinking coffee. You're not, you know, glued to your screens. You're not kind of checking your emails every 5 minutes. So there is a kind of cleansing. And then when you do come out and you're free of all these kind of, all these things we do to ourselves, all this kind of stress we put on ourselves, all the stuff we, all the coffee we drink and the caffeine and whatever else is in that coffee, you know, we're constantly being, you know, feeding ourselves artificial ingredients all the time. Yeah. And when you must be much more sensitive to this when you come out anyway, with a probably much more open mind as well, and a kind of much more just open to the world of possibility. And this is one thing that I find fascinating about your story, because you've got Rasa, which is this product, and you kindly sent me some beforehand, and it's great. I don't quite know what adaptogenic means, but maybe you can tell me in a minute. But we've now got this intersection between spirituality, science, and now commerce as well. And you know, often anything spiritual is kind of dealt with at arm's length, at least in a professional setting. You know, it's left for the weekends, or it's left for, you know, your morning meditation routine before you head to the office or whatever. So how did these, you talked about many streams coming together. How did this kind of moment you had on the mountaintop with this herb translate and transform into essentially what is a product now that you're raising money for and, you know, selling in the open market? How did that happen?
It's a good question. And it all has to do with energy. I'll back up a little bit. Lopa is the CEO and founder of Rasa. And one of the ideas behind starting Rasa was she was a new mother, being a new mother is insanely exhausting. And a lot of mothers go to coffee, and that's perfectly fine. But coffee did not work for her. It didn't work for a lot of her, the women in her mother's circle. And so she started looking around for other ways to nourish and energize that weren't depleting. And that kind of was a journey I was on as well. I drank coffee in my early 20s and at one point realized like this does not work for me. I stopped. I was depressed for, I think, 2 months, like really just down, and started to get more and more in tune with my energy and how we as cultures in the West often use coffee to push ourselves into sorts of productivity that just aren't natural, like ebb and flow. It's like productivity all the time. Let me see how far I can stretch myself. Let me squeeze out an extra couple hours of work. And it left that, doing that to myself left me feeling like an empty husk. Like a lot of my heart energy, a lot of my inspiration, a lot of the ways I connect to spirituality were gone because of that. I had instead more like myopic view, kind of tunnel vision of productivity and work and movement. And my love of adaptogens came about because of that, because I was looking at how, like, for instance, traditional Chinese medicine views coffee as a false qi food or a false fire food, which drains our qi. Qi is kind of our day-to-day energy. And so it falsely gives us energy, but over time it drains our energy.
And I can attest for that. I mean, I love my coffee. I'm kind of hooked on it. But if I have more than a couple of cups, I might as well have just eaten a loaf of bread. You know, I'm just wiped out and I'm just not productive at all. And it's, you know, because you're drinking it, this thing you're in love with, thinking this is going to help me get through the day. But by the end of it, you're pretty exhausted. And rightly so. I mean, the Chinese know what they're talking about when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, and adaptogens are qi tonics. So they're helping you build this vitality and this resilience and giving you a little energy along the way, because many of them are central nervous system stimulants, not nearly to the degree coffee is, but they're giving you a little bit of a boost in how they work with some of our stress response and other systems. They're giving you more vitality, but they're also filling up the tank as you press the pedal. And that difference felt so perfectly timed for where our culture is at with burnout and overwork and how we often approach energy. And that, I think that directly correlates to capitalism as well. Like this avoidance of externalities, like what we're doing to the environment and the dangerous myth of eternal linear growth. Like that sounds a lot like the coffee mind to me. And I think adaptogens are potentially an incredible balm for this type of thinking.
So what are they directly? Are there any herbs that we might have in the garden that are adaptogens? What are they and how do they work?
Yeah, adaptogens, the term adaptogen is not a traditional herbal term. It's a modern scientific term coined by the Russians in the 40s. They were doing a lot of research onto how to get their soldiers and their cosmonauts and their athletes an edge. And they started off working with what you think of as pure stimulants, like methamphetamines. And they realize, like, amazing, the first day on meth, soldiers perform incredible. But the second day, they're a mess. Their performance drops way below average. There's a lot of recovery needed. And so they started looking for substances and plants that would help adapt and build resilience and give a boost in performance the first day and the second day and the third day. And it might not be as dramatic as the pure stimulants, but it's much more sustainable and gives you that edge without coming with the massive need for recovery. And from there, a lot of research was done. Some definitions were put in place. I like to talk about the four N's. They need to be non-toxic, need to be normalizing, which means they bring you back into balance instead of pushing you in one direction or the other. They're non-specific in how they help you adapt to stress. It could be environmental stress, psychological stress, physical stress, and they have to work through the neuroendocrine system, the stress response system. And so there's quite a few herbs that many folks will be familiar with. Ashwagandha is a big one. Cordyceps, the fungus mushroom. Yep, the caterpillar mushroom. Reishi is another mushroom that's an adaptogen. Rhodiola, Schizandra, Astragalus, Shatavari. There's quite a few adaptogens, but there's also a lot of herbs that are called adaptogens that aren't. And the term is a bit of a mess right now because a lot of marketers are saying, oh, chaga is an adaptogen, turmeric is an adaptogen, matcha is an adaptogen, and they don't know the definition and they're not herbalists. And it's getting confusing because none of those three are working through the stress response system in the ways adaptogens do.
So where did the idea to turn them into a kind of coffee alternative come from?
Yeah, coffee is, I think, 90% of, I'm in America, so I don't know the UK stats, but I'm sure they're very similar. 90% of Americans drink coffee, and it's a addiction enforced ritual. And I've used capsules quite a bit and tinctures and powders. And none of those have that type of ritual aspect that coffee does. And we wanted to compete with coffee head on, or at least maybe take the second and third cups. You know, it sounds like you enjoy a cup of coffee in the morning. Like, that's great. Instead of drinking three cups, one in the afternoon and messing with your sleep. Like, if you had Rasa instead, it fits seamlessly into that ritual. Yeah, which makes it much easier to build a habit.
Pretty much exactly what I did this morning. I had my normal cup of coffee when I got up, and then it was a Rasa after that. Nice. And I mean, so coffee, you're kind of, there's a very clever way you've done that. You kind of identified the culture. So you're kind of getting in, because I mean, you could have kind of created a herbal energy drink, I suppose, or something like that, or a herbal tonic drink, which is a very, well, I'm sure it's a big market, but it's still quite a niche market. You're going kind of for the health food market, but this is kind of, you know, again, you've kind of taken something spiritual. You've looked at, you know, day-to-day rituals, and you've kind of said, we're going to piggyback what people already do.
And there's I think there's a cultural zeitgeist building around, you know, maybe in 10 years, coffee will be a bit like alcohol, or, you know, like a lot, you see those t-shirts, like, coffee is my personality, or like, don't talk to me before two cups of coffee. Like, those are funny. And, you know, also slightly alarming if you have an entire population, their baseline personality is on a substance that's really quite strong. And there is a growing number of people looking to cut back or quit coffee, and giving them an alternative. Because it's extremely hard to just quit coffee, not have a ritual, not have any sort of boost in the morning. And you know, coffee is also a plant, and you're getting a lot of great polyphenols from coffee, and there's a lot of benefits. So we wanted to create something that could be an alternative for folks to replace with.
In terms of energy, I mean, everyone I speak to these days, especially, I'm 46 now, and everyone I speak to is tired. I'm tired pretty much all the time. You know, I do all the things that are supposed to make me feel less tired. Like, I exercise pretty much every day. I drink as much water as I can get into me. But I'm just tired. I'm just constantly tired. And I'm sure there's a lot of external factors that are responsible for that, like lifestyle factors. Probably not getting enough sleep. I'm probably looking at my laptop for way too many hours, all this kind of stuff. I mean, in terms of adaptogens, I guess they're not giving us energy, but they're releasing our energy that's there already, our kind of natural energy in a way. I mean, you're someone who clearly, you know, drinks a lot of this stuff, or consumes a lot of these kind of plants, herbs, mushrooms. What are your energy levels like?
Mostly really good. Yeah. I'm recovering from jet lag, and I was on a sourcing trip in India recently. And I think it's something I've thought deeply about for the last, you know, many years. And so, you know, I try to respect my energy more than I used to. And I think if I'm tired, I try to figure out, like, okay, I'm not, like, there's two sides to the equation. And often in our culture, we're not sleeping well, we're sleep deficient. There's a lot of downtime that we no longer have because of our productivity obsession, and just how many things are going on and how many stimuli we're constantly exposed to. And it's something I'm usually tweaking. You know, I'm trying a different Rasa blend for a while, or I'm trying different herbs to see, like, how can I maintain a balanced energy and have less of the peaks and the valleys. And adaptogens are interesting because on a chemical level, many adaptogens share compounds called triterpenoid saponins. And the compound looks very, very similar to cortisol. And so similar, in fact, that it acts as these compounds act as partial agonists at our cortisol receptors. And a lot of times
they keep you awake. They kind of stimulate you
Yeah. So if you have an agonist, it binds to the receptor and activates it. If you have an antagonist, it blocks the receptor. And if you have a partial agonist, it can do both, depending on how much cortisol is already in your bloodstream. So it's a fascinating way to look at how adaptogens act bidirectionally. If you don't have enough cortisol, if you're burnt out and you're completely in that chronic fatigue place, adaptogens can give you a little bit of a boost. If you're chronically stressed and you have chronically high levels of cortisol, which many of us do, impacts your sleep, impacts your digestion, your libido, your mood, adaptogens can block some of those receptors and also help potentiate the negative feedback loop that turns the cortisol switch off. And so we're effectively putting a floor and a ceiling on our cortisol levels, which can have dramatic impacts on our overall energy throughout the day.
This is fascinating. It sounds like a kind of wonder substance, you know, all from nature. It's like, why haven't we already, why has it taken this long for Russell to come around? What's going on?
I mean, traditional, many cultures have known about these forever. Yeah. You look at the idea of vitality in traditional Chinese medicine. You have qi in Ayurveda, you have prana in Greek medicine, you have pneuma. And all of these cultures also realized this qi can get compromised. And they had herbs particularly for restoring qi and for restoring prana. And a lot of these herbs called qi tonics in traditional Chinese medicine, called rasayanas or rejuvenative tonics in Ayurveda. These are the adaptogens we're now talking about. So these other cultures had it figured out. We're just kind of now like, oh, okay. There are herbs that work in a way that our culture really needs. And I think it's beautiful that we're also tying in the science as well.
Yeah, that's what really appeals to me, because, you know, I like to think of myself as a pretty spiritual guy. I meditate, I read the books, I don't go as far as chanting just yet, but I have, you know, quite open to other people doing that. But I also like the science. I'm a kind of magical realist. I had a conversation with Martha Beck, and she called herself a magical realist. You know, it's like, I love the idea that, you know, there's a lot we don't know yet. So I'm pretty open to all these kind of ideas. And also kind of Ayurveda, for example, I had a conversation about this on the podcast just a few episodes ago, which also brings me to another kind of interesting point. In Ayurveda, we all have a type. So what works for one person might not necessarily work for someone else. With the blends that you've prepared of rasa, are they kind of engineered to work for everybody, or do we have to kind of pick and choose the one that's going to work for us, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a challenge as a formulator. I got a master's in clinical herbalism and did a lot of work in school with individual clients, and a bit out of school as well. And you see an individual client, like for instance, I would consider myself Pitta Kapha in the Ayurvedic dosha system. And then you look at herbs, you know, some of the adaptogens are quite extreme constitutionally. Rhodiola is very cold and very dry. Ashwagandha is quite heating. You know, some of the ginsengs are moistening, and you compare it to an individual, but when you're formulating for, at this point we have over 100,000 customers. And so you have this agglomerate and you can't skew one direction or the other. You have to make a balanced formula. And that's something we strive for. If a blend has a high dose of ashwagandha, which is heating, we'll try to add in some more cooling herbs to balance it out and try not to provoke anyone's constitution too much.
Yeah, that's incredibly difficult. I mean, is there a danger that you're going to kind of end up with something that's quite inert, because you're kind of introducing one thing and then almost canceling it out with something else? How do you maintain the kind of, make sure it's still active and still doing what you want it to do, without kind of just kind of dumbing everything down with kind of herbs and anti-herbs, if you know what I mean?
Yep. If it's a purely constitutional problem, then there are certain rasas that are a little, like we have a spicy rose cacao that's ginger and cayenne, and definitely clearly on the spicy side, on the heating side. And so if you're a cold person, you might gravitate towards that blend. But on a whole, adaptogens actually work really well in combination, because they're sometimes too intense on their own. And when you put them in combination, you get nice synergy, and they're often working in slightly different ways. A lot of them have the same chemistry, but they also have their own individual personalities. And so you get a much fuller picture when you combine adaptogens. And that's actually how a lot of clinical herbalists working with individuals do it as well. You know, it's usually a blend of adaptogens.
Yeah.
Very rarely would you give someone straight rhodiola. I see that capsules in the store all the time, but it's quite intense to take straight rhodiola for a long period of time.
In terms of one of your blends is a kind of immune system booster. In terms of the kind of health giving aspects of these blends and these herbs and plants, how much can it kind of help us, you know, fend off colds, coughs, live a healthy lifestyle, fend off kind of all the things that we don't want to be, you know, all the kind of lifestyle induced illnesses that we don't want to be struck down with?
That's a good question. Adaptogens, there's quite a lot of research on how they interact with our immune system specifically, how they upregulate immune cells. But on a more systemic foundational level, they're extremely well at helping us balance stress. And stress is, in my opinion, a modern epidemic. It's at the root cause of a profound amount of diseases, because when you're chronically stressed, your system starts putting resources into the stress and taking them away from other parts of the body. Immunity is a great example of this. When you're about to fight a bear or run for your life, your immune system doesn't really matter. Analogy I use when I teach is it's kind of like when an ambulance goes by, the other cars pull over on the side of the road, and then the ambulance is gone and everything resumes back to normal. That's how stress should work. We have this evolutionarily new chronic stress that we've never dealt with in our entire history as humans. And that is looks a lot like ambulances just constantly going down the road, and the infrastructure guys are stuck in their cars on the side. The digestion guys are never making it into the city to do their work. The libido guys are, you know, like that. It just shuts off all of our other systems. And so you fix stress and you get these cascading benefits of a lot of more libido, better digestion, better immunity. And that's one of the ways herbalism tries to work in its best form, is like, let's not look at the kind of the top level, like here are the issues you're dealing with, here are some band-aids, but like, what is the foundational imbalances that are causing a lot of these issues?
Yeah, this is a conversation I had with a lady called Jaya Myra just a few episodes ago, and she had fibromyalgia. And she realized that it was lifestyle. It was all lifestyle. And one of the big ones being stress. But is the benefit undone? You talk about this kind of, we've talked about the kind of trauma of life, just of living, because life can be hard, you know, and just, you know, keeping your head above water. Is it kind of going to undo the good work if you're sipping your Rasa coffee, but you're watching the news and another 10,000 people have got COVID, there's another war going on, and a bill has dropped through the letterbox and your bank balance is kind of a bit low at the moment. Is it kind of going to negate all the kind of healthy lifestyle stuff
when that happens? No. And I don't want to present adaptogens as this silver bullet, because there's a danger in that as well. You know, I think it's a very tantalizing thing to think, oh, I can take this one class of plants and everything will be fixed. But they're part of a broader solution. And, you know, exercise, good relationships, a relationship to spirituality, proper nutrition. There's another analogy I like to use a lot, and this gets a bit graphic perhaps. So it's about animals. A lot of the research in general on many substances are done with mice, and they, it's like the floater sink test. They put them in a bucket and they see how long they struggle before they give up. And adaptogens help the mice struggle longer. But if we're using adaptogens to just struggle longer, Like, that's not a good solution. If we're using adaptogens to help build a ladder out of the bucket, that's better. And yeah. and thinking about how can I use adaptogens intentionally to maybe get a little extra motivation to start exercising again, or start building back healthy relationships. And I also recognize there's some amount of privilege in saying this, because for many folks, it is just a struggle that it's really hard to get out of, and adaptogens can help certainly there. But I like to say, like, it's part of a solution, not, yeah. not a magic bullet.
I guess there's a, in the West here, we have this kind of outward in perspective. You know, we're always looking for the thing that's going to make us happy, or the thing that's going to make us healthy, or, you know, what can I eat today that's going to, like, fix all my problems and, you know, cure my stomach problem. What more can I put into myself that's going to, you know, what more can I purchase, or what, you know, what more things can I bring into my life? Where actually it needs to be motivated from the inside out. It's like, how can I be healthy? What can I cut out? How can I motivate myself to change my lifestyle? And, you know, what can I do that's healthy? Rather than saying this one product, this Rasa, product is going to fix all my problems, but just see it as an ingredient in a wider kind of recipe for wellness and healthy living and that kind of thing. Talking of those kind of things, what else can, and I mean, you're clearly someone who knows about plants, knows about digestion and the human body. What other things can we do and bring into our diet maybe that will make us healthy, give us more energy, give us more vibrance going into the day?
Yeah, I mean, I'm unabashedly a plant pusher. so that's a good question. When you look at the phytochemical diversity in our diet, basically how many chemicals we're getting from plants in our modern diet, it is a fraction of what our evolutionary ancestors got. Like, the average person in the West really only gets 8 to 10 plant species on a daily basis, you know, corn, wheat, and that's really hurting our bodies that are used to having this constant dialogue with hundreds of different species. And so adaptogens are a wonderful class to incorporate daily. Other classes are really like bitters. We have this liver that evolved to deal with bitter plants, and now we don't really eat a lot of bitter things. And that causes our liver to get a little sluggish, and having bitters in our diet consistently can help us in a lot of different ways.
I mean, are these,
and particularly with digestion,
are these herbs that actually taste bitter, or is this another way? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yellow dock, like dandelion.
Yep.
Blue vervain. Those types. And those are incredible for digestion.
Yeah.
Another class of herbs that I think we should all be aware of and taking pretty consistently are nervines, herbs that help us relax our nervous system. These can be the aromatic nervines, which, you know, peppermint, linden, you have tons of linden trees in the UK, chamomile, like they're very gentle herbs, but they can help us relax a state of tension that has become our normal. And that's really powerful.
Yeah, fantastic. And I suppose it has to be a kind of holistic view of our lives, really. It's we're kind of addicted to this constant stress, you know, stress of kind of wanting to buy more, wanting to kind of put more kind of stressful stuff into us, because it, like you say, it keeps us able to be productive longer, but then we kind of crash and burn afterwards. And you think, well, actually, what have I got out of this? Whereas when you enter into this dialogue with the food we eat and where it comes from, and it's kind of, you become part of the natural cycle as well.
Yep. And that's one of the passions for me with adaptogens versus coffee. In my own personal experience, and I don't want to project this on anyone else, but coffee, it's sometimes hard for me to tell, am I excited about what my heart really feels, or am I just excited? Like it's hard to differentiate. Without that amount of stimulation, it's really easy to tell, like, this is what I'm excited about. Like, this is what I want to be doing. And I've used coffee in the past to push myself into doing things I don't necessarily want to, but coffee makes me excited to do them. And that's a, overall horrible for energy, because at some point you're like, oh, I used all this energy when I could have been naturally sourcing energy out of my own inspiration.
It's funny. I used to have a I used to have a long commute into an office many years ago, and had a horrible relationship with my boss at the time. And every day I would get into trouble about something, and my I'd have to get up incredibly early in the morning, and I'd have, because I was so tired, because I didn't want to go into work in the first place, so I'd stay up late the night before. So I was drinking like an enormous latte or something like that, incredibly strong, extra shots in it, and all that kind of stuff. And my anxiety levels were going up and up and up, because I'd be on the train thinking, what's going to happen today? What kind of trouble am I going to get into? And there kind of became this kind of Pavlov's dog relationship with coffee and anxiety. And for a long time after that, I couldn't drink coffee because it brought all of those feelings back that I associated with anxiety. And I've spoken to a few other people as well who can't drink coffee because it aggravates their depression, their anxiety. They get panic attacks and all kinds of things from it. And so, it's a powerful thing. Caffeine is an incredibly powerful thing. And I mean, there is caffeine in Rasa as well, but only small amounts.
There's no caffeine in most of our blends. We have a couple with cacao that is trace amounts of caffeine. And then we have one blend that's half coffee for the folks that are weaning or are just not going to give it up.
Is that a dirty blend? That's the one I had this morning. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, fantastic. So, okay. So there are benefits to caffeine, obviously. But you don't want to be living on it like we do in the West, more or less. But so where is it now? I mean, you're still fundraising. I'm getting the emails every day as a customer. I'm getting the fundraising emails. How long is it going to be before we see it on all the shelves everywhere? What's the kind of state of play at the moment?
Yeah, we're about 4 years old, and we bootstrapped initially. So we're self-funded, and we prioritize e-commerce. And so we mostly sell through our website and on Amazon. And then as we needed to raise money, because products businesses often require a lot of capital, we wanted to, this goes back to the coffee again. We kind of see venture capital as the coffee of fundraising. It's the most powerful, well-funded injection of money that you could possibly have, but it's also a low quality money.
Yeah.
Like they need an exit in 5 to 7 years. They're often quite controlling. And so we knew we didn't want to go that route, and we ended up crowdfunding, which has been really, really beautiful, because we've raised about 4 million. We're just under 4 million right now. And it's been a combination of our own customers, which are not only buying the product from us, but now are going to benefit from our growth. We have over 5, maybe 6 now of our own ingredient suppliers. So I was just in India visiting one of our suppliers there, understanding what they're doing with sustainability and organic farming, and our relationships really deepening, and they invested in our growth too. So not only am I buying herbs from them, but they're able to participate in what we do. We have over 2,500 individual investors, as opposed to one big VC that just writes a check and then kind of lords it over you. So it's been a really beautiful way to change how fundraising often operates.
Yeah, because that's really vital, isn't it? Because I know that, a lot of there are only really two big investment houses in the US. Vanguard is one of them. And I think, is it BlackRock is another one? And they essentially own all the companies, all the big companies. So they own Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They own Microsoft and they own, or at least they're major shareholders. They own Microsoft and they own Apple. So you could get investment from one of these companies, and that there could also be a heavy investor in a kind of product you don't believe in at all, something that's quite damaging to the environment, fossil fuels or something like that. So this is a much more, we were talking earlier about the kind of the bringing together of spirituality and commerce. This seems to be a much more kind of authentic way to go about it for what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and one thing I like about it is it more closely mimics nature. In an ecosystem, it is very much, you know, give and take. Everyone's benefiting from everyone, and there's no one reason for anyone existing. You know, everyone has multiple parts to play, and that looks a lot more like crowdfunding than this kind of linear hierarchical. You know, you have the venture capital fund that invests in the company that sells to customers, and they all just try and squeeze the most out of each other up the line.
Yeah.
And this feels much better because now our customers are also our investors. And so if we're trying to do best by our investors, we're serving our customers and our suppliers, and we're also a public benefit corporation. So we have more stakeholders besides just investors. We're also taking into consideration the health of the planet and the plants and our supply communities. And so it feels just much more intermeshed than you often see.
Yeah, it's a beautiful model, really. And it takes me right back to the forest. You know, the traditional forestry has always been, you know, take out the smaller trees to let the stronger trees grow. But actually what you're doing is you're harming the kind of the symbiotic relationship of all the trees, that kind of they feed each other through the mycorrhizal network under the ground. They support each other. And the health of the forest as a whole is dependent on every aspect, you know, every tree being healthy. And I love that. And that's, I think we've lost that aspect of nature in our kind of consumption, our consumerist kind of greed to just get as much as we can, take all the time. And we're actually harming ourselves as a result of that. But that's beautiful. So in terms of buying online and finding out more about the story behind Rasa and adaptogens and where they can get hold of Rasa for themselves, where can our listeners go to get hold of it?
Yeah, if you're in the US, our website's wearerasa.com. If you're in the UK or parts of Canada, Europe, Australia, Amazon is really the best place to purchase Rasa right now. And I have a 15% off code for you, Chris. Living 15, all caps. That will work with Amazon and our website for anyone that wants to try Rasa.
Well, I will put that in the show notes and you know, share that widely. And I'll mention it right at the beginning of the podcast as well when I record the intros and outros to this. But that's brilliant. I love this kind of, you know, that it's so easy to get kind of a little bit put off by the whole spiritual aspect of it, but you've really brought in the science as well. And I love that. And that's really kind of what I'm about. So very enthusiastic about what you're doing and the message behind it all, as well as, you know, the product as well. So thank you so much for just sharing your time with me and your knowledge. And it's really encouraging. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Chris. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you. So there we go. I love that conversation because, as I mentioned, I'm a magical realist. I'm a firm believer in science, but I truly believe that there are wonderful things out there that science just hasn't figured out yet. But somehow, if we open ourselves up to the possibility that they might be real, just as the ancient wisdom did of our ancient cultures that went before us, then we can get to experience something outside of what we know, which will enrich us and make our lives deeper and more textured. And I love what Ben and Rasa are all about, to the extent that as soon as this conversation was over and we'd finished recording, I went straight out and invested in the company myself. So I put my money where my mouth is, and I'm now a part owner of Rasa. So go and check it out. You know, they're doing some amazing stuff here, and it's a new way of thinking about what we consume in terms of how it makes us feel and our relationship with nature as well. So I love that. So there we go. I recommend you try it for yourself, or at the very least become more aware of the relationship between how you feel and what you consume, and you know, check them out as well. They're at wearerasa.com. That's Rasa, RASA.com. You can find them on Amazon, and don't forget that discount code that I mentioned before, LIVING15, all caps. So check it out. All of this information will also be in the show notes. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, we are speaking to real estate mogul Kelly Robinson, not about real estate per se, but about building empires and how to overcome the challenges that we all face in terms of self-doubt, lack of opportunities, mindset, that sort of thing, and about how to create a life and a reality that's all our own design and really step up to life so that life will step up to meet you. So there we go. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and stay tuned. And until next week, have a lovely day.